Art of Advisory. My name is Hector Garcia from QuickBookkeeping, and I'm here joined by my co-host, Kirk Bowman. Hey, Kirk. How you doing, my
friend? Hey, Hector. Welcome back for another week.
Absolutely. Very excited about today. We're going to be talking about a topic that Kirk's going to cover in detail in the big QuickBooks conference that we're going next week. And it's about after action reviews. And what's actually the full name of the session, Kirk?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. I think it's the best learning tool ever invented.
Okay, so that's a pretty big title, the best learning tool ever invented. So let's start with let's get right to it. Why is it the best learning tool ever invented?
Well, I think to answer that question, we first need to define it. So an AAR, it's a term that we get from the military. It's an after-action review. And the idea is that in the military, whenever they send a group of soldiers out on a mission, after the mission's complete and they come back, everyone involved in the mission, from the private in the field to the commander and everyone in between, gets in a room. While they're in that room, there is no rank. Everybody has the same voice, and they try to answer three questions. What went well? What didn't go well? And what can we learn from this? And the idea in the military is they never want to make the same mistake twice. They want to constantly improve. And so AAR is really simply about having a process for constant improvement within your organization. That's why it's the best learning tool, is because the learning never stops. The idea is if something went well, we want to make sure we did it, do it again. If something didn't go well, we want to make sure we identify it and put in place action steps so that it will not repeat. It doesn't mean we won't make mistakes in the future. The idea is that we don't want to make the same mistake for the same reasons. We want to learn from every single engagement. And this concept applies from the solopreneur all the way up to the Fortune 100 company.
Okay. For some folks, this may just sound super obvious, like, sure, you know, after every action, you should, you know, review how it went. But why isn't it that obvious? Why isn't it something that's used very often? Maybe I can answer that question by telling you my experience working in big companies. I used to work for Best Buy. I used to work for Wells Fargo. And I started my business about 10 years ago. And I found myself doing my employee reviews sort of the same way I learned how to do them in the big businesses. And these big businesses, their practice of doing employee reviews is to wait a whole year to give their employees feedback about how they behaved or how their performance was for the whole year. And then they use a very arbitrary system and every arbitrary process where they ask a whole bunch of questions like, did you meet your sales goals? And then as a manager, we're supposed to rate the person and give a 1 to 5, you know, and it's obviously completely subjective up to, you know, whatever the manager's objective is. So I believe that to be an extremely ineffective way of giving employees feedback to improve their performance. And I found myself doing the same thing. My first couple of employees, that's what I did. I sit down with them once a year. We did a 1 to 5 review, went over the questions, discussed our differences, and then went on to give them the 3 to 5% increase in salary. And I got to tell you, it just wasn't effective. I mean, there's no, you know, those first two employees I didn't keep, right? They went on, they found a job that possibly had someone that was a better leader in terms of giving them feedback. You know, now I found myself, I'm not an expert at the after action review, but I find myself giving feedback more often in a monthly or quarterly basis, or maybe even do it right after some sort of action. Now, in the accounting world, an action could be a project. It could be a customer deliverable. It could be a customer interaction. It could be one marketing task. You know, it could actually mean anything that has sort of a finite you know, beginning to end sort of a project. And this could be something small, something big. But the idea behind it is that we recalling that sort of short-term memory, okay, what just happened, and let's go through it. So maybe, Kirk, maybe you can be a little bit more detailed in terms of what the actual process of doing the after-action review is.
So the question you asked at the beginning of that segment was, why don't more people do it? Or why do people need a process to do it? Well, it's kind of the chicken and the egg. You won't do it if you don't have a process, and you need a process because you won't do it without it. The idea seems simple, as do many things that would fall under this umbrella of common wisdom or conventional wisdom. It makes sense that you would review something for the opportunity to improve. But we're so busy nowadays that if you do not have a formal process in place, and if learning, this idea of learning and not repeating mistakes, is not something that's part of the organizational culture, it will be skipped over. That's why, because unless there's a process in place, unless there's a checklist, unless there's somebody responsible for making sure it happens, and unless there are consequences other than just repeating the mistakes, but unless there are not some type of incentives to do it and to promote it, it won't happen. We won't do it just because. It just doesn't happen. There's probably a few disciplined people that will, but most won't. Most people need processes and a system of continuous learning. That is why it is so important. Now, you may think, well, if I'm a solopreneur, number one, how do I do that? And number two, why should I bother? Well, let me answer the questions the reverse order I asked them. Why should you bother? Because you have no perspective other than your own. And it is hard to see the outside of the can when you're in the can. All right? You can't tell what is outside. You cannot, just by the fact that as a solopreneur, you are your company, there is no way for you to put on the perspective of an outsider looking in without some type of after-action review. And so to do an after-action review for a solopreneur or a small organization, a lot of times you may have to find a peer who is willing to kind of sit in the observer's chair for an AAR on your project, and then you in turn agree to do it for them. And by the way, you were kind of essentially, without saying it, you asked the question in your last segment about, well, what do we do an AAR on? And I would say you do an AAR on a project. Well, what's a project? Well, the most basic definition of a project is a temporary endeavor undertaken to achieve some result or goal. By temporary, we typically mean something that's 18 months or less, and many times in accounting and bookkeeping, it either is a year, because the project is essentially financial planning and management for the year, or it's then some type of special project. So a special project could be something like, we need to obtain financing, so we need to do a special set of financial statements to kind of, you know, reflect the business at a certain time point. Or we may need to evaluate inventory in a certain way using a different method that the bank prefers, something of that nature. That would be a special project. But you have to have a project to do an AAR, because at some point it's got an end. And the whole name of it is after action review. So when do you do an after action review? Well, after the action's taken place. We might call it an after project review. Okay. The Army calls it an after action review because that's how they refer to missions or projects in the Army. It's an action. A team took an action, right? And you were kind of picking up on that vocabulary. But I think the word project really fits more for us. But you need to do it with a partner. And it doesn't have to be a real long process. In fact, it shouldn't be when you're a solopreneur. It's probably about a 15-minute or less process when you're a solopreneur or a small team, but you can still gain wisdom. And if you actually have a team, it's even more important, because if there's multiple people involved in delivering the project, then there's going to be multiple perspectives. And there may be somebody on that team who has actually done something in a new way that actually innovates. And if you don't have a process set up to capture that, somebody may innovate, nobody ever knows it. You may actually have a better way of doing things, but it gets lost because somebody did it one time, they didn't realize it was an innovation, and they didn't tell anybody else. And this also relieves both the team members and the team leader from having to think, oh, I need to report this. This is something that other people need to know about. There's a formal process in place. So in other words, again, it's not something that we have to think about. It's just something that is part of the corporate culture.
And let's do an example for those folks that are maybe solopreneurs that don't have a team member to do this with, or maybe a spouse to do this with. And we're going to completely outlive this. So let's say I'm going to use Kirk. I'm going to use Kirk to bounce ideas off. So Kirk's a friend of mine. We're not even in the same company. We're partners in the podcast, but that's it. So I find a friend that's in the industry or not in the industry to sort of bounce ideas off, right? So let's just set the scenario. So let's say, for example, I perform monthly bookkeeping services for a client, and the client expects us to send them a report every month of the profit and loss, the balance sheet, and maybe some specialized report. But very routine. We do the client all the time. We charge the same dollar amount all the time. This would be the most mundane thing that we would not think about doing an after action review on. And this is really where it becomes really interesting, because if you take something that's extremely mundane, that you don't think of it as a project, but you start digging deeper into it, you discover pretty interesting things. So Kirk, are you up for the challenge?
Let's do it.
Okay, so I'll start. So Kirk, I just delivered the financial statements for the client on the 10th of this month, and the client looked at them, said okay, and that's it. Nothing else happened. That was the culmination of the monthly project.
Okay, so what went well about the project?
Okay, well, there's a general expectation that we're going to get these done by the 15th. So I would say that one win, or what went well, is that we delivered on time. And other than that, I really can't think of anything else. But I think that's what we did well. It was delivered on time.
So when you say on time, define that. You delivered by the 15th, you delivered on the 15th,
before
specific.
Yeah, so we delivered on the 10th. So it was right, it was a couple of days before the 15th.
So you actually delivered early, right? About five days.
Yeah, early. Exactly.
So is that typical?
No. It just happened to be a slower month. May and June are slower months. So we're able to get work done faster, actually.
Okay. So do you think you've set an expectation with this customer that they're going to be getting it early in the future?
No, it was an anomaly. Usually we do it right on the 15th. We're just usually racing against the clock. So we had done it by the 10th, and we figured we'd just email it to them.
Okay. All right. What kind of feedback did you get from the customer on the financial statements?
You know, this particular customer doesn't seem to look at a whole lot of details. They usually just give me, they send me questions when they don't understand something. So this time around, they didn't send any questions. So I'm not sure if they understood it or they didn't look at it. But there actually happened to be no feedback that's worth mentioning.
Okay. So I find it interesting that you said, I actually don't know if they looked at it or not. So what does that tell you about this process? Is that, let me rephrase it. So you do this every month of the year. So 12 months during one financial period, whether it's a calendar year or not. So how, out of 12 months, how often do you think the customer does not look at them? Or conversely, how often do you think they look at them?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. I know they look at it when they ask me questions about it. And I would say that would be about 50-50. So 1 month they ask a question, 1 month they're not. I've grown to believe that maybe they trust the judgment, and that's why they trust the numbers. But sometimes I suspect that maybe they don't even understand them. But I haven't found a way to, like, you know, ask him, hey, do you really want to spend some time understanding the numbers? Sometimes I'm scared that they may even sound condescending. So I really don't know. It's about 50-50. Sometimes they ask questions, sometimes they don't. I know for a fact when they ask questions, they looked at it. But I don't know when they don't ask questions, if they looked at it or not.
Okay, so every other month they ask a question. Okay, I just wanted to, the reason for that question was, you know, if you're only getting feedback like 2 months out of 12, there may be something there we want to look at. If it's every other time, okay, that's pretty regular. That's cyclical. So, you know, every other time you're getting feedback. So let me ask you, with that in mind, did the customer give you feedback last month?
Yes. Last month they had a question about one of the expenditures, one of the expense lines that wasn't there before. And we created a new expense category for a rather large expenditure that they made. But it didn't repeat this month, so it didn't come up in conversation.
Okay. What value does the customer derive from getting these monthly financial statements? Why are they important? In other words, maybe a separate second way to ask that question would be, what if they went away?
That's a couple. So I strongly believe that if they went away, it wouldn't really affect the client so much. However, when we first engaged with them about 2 years ago, they were, you know, they wanted to have them. So there was like something about it. They wanted to have them, and I feel they get some sense of satisfaction from feeling that their books are completed, but I can't quite figure out what value they derive from it. It's one of the challenges that I have. I don't know if they do anything with them. Sometimes I'm worried whether I should ask, and if I ask, would it be going down a rabbit hole? I'm not sure, because it became a pretty routine service. And it became more about just getting it done and getting it done in time than anything deeper than that.
Okay. So let me go to the second question, because we're kind of transitioning to there. What are some things you could improve in this process? What are some things that you think you could do better?
Sure. I mean, even though we delivered on the 10th, you know, that's still 10 days from the beginning of the month. So I think there's always an opportunity to deliver it faster. But also, you know, when you look at all the clients, there is an opportunity to do all of them faster. So it's like, you know, how do I prioritize? So so I think always being able to deliver them faster, as long as we keep within the same, you know, accuracy percentage, I think that's always an opportunity. I think the other opportunity that we have is it's have a little bit more deeper interactions with these report deliveries, but I can't figure out how to get their attention. But I think that may be the opportunity. Those are the ones I think anyway.
Well, one of the reasons I asked you that question is I felt like we were leading there, because as I asked you about the value they derived from it, you said, you know, you weren't certain. And you also mentioned, well, I should ask them, but you know, maybe there's a little bit of hesitancy to do that, maybe a little bit of fear involved. So I would suggest that one of the areas you can have to improve is find out what the value the customer is deriving from this, and ask the customer how often they really need them. Like, for example, what if this went from being something you did monthly to something you did quarterly, and nothing else changed? In other words, you were still paid the same amount, but instead of doing it 12 times a year, you did it 4 times a year.
I'm worried that if we lower it to quarterly, the client's going to expect to pay less. And at the end of the day, it may just be the same amount of work to do a monthly versus quarterly. If anything, it's almost a little bit better to be monthly, because when you ask the client a question about something that happened 90 days in the past, sometimes they just forget. So I think internally it's just faster for us to do it monthly. I don't know if there would be a value on delivering it, doing it monthly, but delivering it quarterly. So that's actually a really good question you're asking. I don't know. Maybe you can suggest, how can I approach this? Or what would be the way to approach this with a client?
I would simply call the customer up. You know, maybe next month. You don't do it this month, but wait till next month, plan ahead of time, and you deliver it. And, you know, you have 3 to 5 days, and then call the customer up and go, hey, have you had a chance to look at those? What'd you think? If they haven't looked at them, do you mind my asking why you haven't had a chance to look at it? And it could be they're in the middle of a busy season. So you may actually want to have a, you know, and you might know this because you've been doing it monthly, right? If you've been doing this monthly for the customer for more than a year, you should have a sense of when their busy season is. But obviously one of the answers could be, well, I just haven't been able to get to it. But, you know, what what value are you getting out of this? And you can put it this way. You can say, hey, would it be more helpful to you if you got this information once every 2 weeks instead of once a month, or every other month instead of every month? Kind of put both out there and see what their feedback is. So I understand that the hesitation could be, you know, the concern is, well, we're doing it monthly, and if I propose a change, it might affect us in a negative way, right? Financially. Not necessarily. Put it out there. What happens if you get it faster? What happens if you get it slower? You know, and engage with a customer. The other thing is, you know, you mentioned you're emailing this to them, and I'm thinking, you know, what if you took a more consultative approach where you actually review this with them? Instead of just send it to them, you know, one idea would be you review it and, you know, in your email you say, hey, I noticed these anomalies. What do you think of these? Or you might even have a situation where you walk them through it. I don't know. Look for some type of opportunity to engage them, but ask them what they would like. That would be some ideas.
So let me ask you a couple of questions about that. So if I understand correctly, you're saying not necessarily change the frequency, but give them options about faster or slower, right? So you're asking to create the framework where there's an option to do it quarterly or an option to do it weekly, and then see where the client sort of feels one way or the other. So that's what you're suggesting, is to give them options on the left side, on the right side, so we can see which way they lean.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Because as you said yourself, you're not sure what the customer value is from it. We already suspect that some months this is more beneficial than others. And so we just want to dive into that more. Is there more value you can provide to the customer? Or is this something that doesn't have high value to the customer? And maybe you should find something else that is higher value that could help instead. You don't want to assume the benefit here. And obviously, as I said at the beginning, the three main questions, I'm kind of taking a pause in the role play just a second. Obviously, the three big questions are, what went well, what didn't go well, and what can we learn from this? And we have gotten into that. And I would say, even though we're doing this role play, even when you do it live, you're not necessarily going to ask those questions verbatim. It's going to be kind of this dialogue like we're having. And what I picked up on is you weren't sure what the value was to the customer. So one of the things we can do for improvement, number one, is figure out what is valuable to them. And so you asked me for suggestions for how to do that. So that's kind of where this dialogue is going. So we can get back into the role play if you want to keep going, but that I just kind of wanted to step out of that for a second, point out we are covering the ground we said we would cover, even if we're not asking those questions in the specific wording that I gave them.
So before we step back into the role play, let me ask you some questions about sort of like what we did here. So the first thing you asked is what went well. The other one is what could we have done better? That was the second question. What exactly is the second question?
The three, as I framed it, were what went well, what didn't go well, and what could we learn from this?
Okay. So we were talking about what didn't go well, which, you know, there really wasn't one, but you alluded to that the fact that there is lack of knowledge on what the client values and what the role of that task is in their sort of bigger picture, it's unknown. And that you consider to be something that didn't go well. So although, you know, you hear the expression, no news is good news, but you're saying that's not necessarily it. You're saying that may be more of a risk.
Correct. Particularly in something that is done on a repetitive basis. So anything that's done on a frequency of every month can fall into a routine. And it can just be something that we do because we've always done it. And so that's kind of where my questioning was leading. And this is probably going to be different answers for different customers. There's probably another customer that you can think of, you know, it's essential, you know, they dive in. It's just in this particular situation, I was curious, has this got into routine? And we're in this case, it sounds like it's gray area. We're not sure. But with something, you know, it's with something that's done with regularity, and I would say, you know, anything that's done monthly falls into that category. You want to make sure you're not just doing it because it's the way you've always done it.
And you did mention something else during sort of the back and forth we were doing the role play, you were suggesting that instead of emailing these reports to, you know, maybe call the client, maybe walk him through it in a sort of remote session using a tool like Zoom or maybe in person, on site, whatever it happens to be. You know, what if we're dealing with a situation where this this job was priced, you know, pretty thinly because it was very routine work? You know, what if we acquired the client at a sort of a very low cost because the client pretty much said, I just want this to be done. This is just compliance. I'm not looking for advisory services. Obviously, because the theme of the show is art of advisory and we're always trying to figure out how to turn everything into advisory, you went that route, which I really appreciate. But is there room during the after action review, during the actual role play, to kind of discuss ideation about how to go about turning this into advisory?
Certainly. I mean, that's literally one of the benefits of doing the after action review. Just as in the role play, we started going down that road, those type of conversations will flow out of an after action review. It is the appropriate time to go, look, is this routine? Is there a better way to do it? Did we innovate, or is there an opportunity to innovate that we didn't take advantage of that we could see coming? That's exactly one of the reasons you want to have an after action review. Now, that doesn't mean that every after action review is going to generate new ideas or new innovations. But if you don't have a tool and a system and a process in place, you won't be able to have those opportunities. The only other time it's going to happen if you don't have a system or a process is it's just going to be around the water cooler or at lunch or at a conference. But those are times where it's not going to be captured. And this process is not only about having the conversation, but also having some way of capturing it. So we're not just having a conversation. There should be some type of written summary of the after action review, the date and time it happened, you know, what the customer was, what the project was, some general answers to these questions. I mean, and by the way, it's okay to have an after action review that you just kind of feel like it, you know, you just answer the questions and there wasn't much outcome. Okay. You're not, you know, nobody hits a home run every time they get up to bat, but you don't know when the home run's going to take place. And the only way you know is you get up to bat.
So the after action review is not necessarily to force you to change something, right? It's more to go through the exercise of reviewing these three very important things. You know, what went well, what didn't go so well, what did we learn from it, and go through the exercise of journalizing these, like getting it off your brain and into some sort of permanent document, whether it's in a piece of paper or a Google Doc or an email with a team member. It's just forcing you to get the stuff from inside your brain into some other medium that other people can pick up from, assuming you start learning. Recording your learnings and then maybe expanding your team. So this is something that could be useful later on when maybe, you know, educating or training your staff.
Exactly. Not only are we essentially having a regular discovery process to look for innovation, but this is also an opportunity to review existing systems, processes, and procedures. Do we need to refine those? Is there a new one we need to create? Is there an existing one that is obsolete that we don't need anymore? It's an opportunity to revise those things. Obviously, all accountants have a vested interest with their customer to help them systematize their business. That's part of actually building a business, is systematizing it, something that's repeatable. You know, we could talk about, you know, franchises are one of the best examples of that. But essentially, you know, thinking of your business as a franchise of one, and these after action reviews will help you create the processes, revise the processes, keep them up to date. So it's not only about looking for innovation, but it's also looking for that constant minor revision that should be happening to the systems and processes that are in place, just because that becomes an asset of the business.
What do you think about using Mahan Khalsa's 5 golden questions from the book, Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play? And I'll give you a quick refresher for the folks that haven't read the book. So Mahan Khalsa says that anytime we get into a situation in which we're trying to measure, right? And measurement is, you know, probably an entire episode we can dedicate to, you know, the pros and cons to measurement. But, you know, in the after action review, we're placing or passing some sort of judgment on the performance of an individual or a group of individuals during a project or an action of some sort. And sometimes measurement is a very subjective thing. You know, like if you were to ask me, was the customer happy? I could say yes or no, but then who knows whether I'm right or wrong. But you were alluding to a specific question, which is, what is the value they derive from the work that I do? And that's sort of a measurable thing. So what Mahan Kaul says is, look, anytime that you're dealing with words that are measurable, right? Words like sales, cost, quality, customer satisfaction, productivity, performance, time, or time from the perspective of speed, you know, how quick we get it done. And we talked about that briefly. Anytime we have those operative words that look and smell and feel like it's a measurable result, what Mahan Kaul says is there's a 5-step process to figuring out how to adapt that into your engagement or into the process of advising your client or selling them on another product or service. And these are the 5 questions, Kirk. How do you measure it? So whatever that it is, that measurable event is, or that measurable result, that's the first question we need to ask. How do you measure it? The second one is, what is it now? So can we gauge and take a snapshot of whatever that unit of measurement that we're using? What is it now before we start working and before we insert any new sort of improvement and suggestions and re-engineering or whatever happens to be? So what is that number now? That's the second question. The third question is, what do you want it to be? So that's just basically goal setting. So where we want to go from this number to that number, whatever that number is, what do you want it to be? And then the key question is, which I think is what you asked, is what is the value of the difference, right? What is the value of the difference? And then after we determine that value, is that a sort of a one-time value? Is there permanent value? Is that value over time, you know, over a month, a year? So your question is, you know, what does the client value from your work? And my work was from having no financial statement to having a financial statement. That's what we did, right? So how do we measure it? Well, we'll deliver the financial statement. That's how we measure it. Is it complete? Did we deliver it in time? What is it now? So the client doesn't have one or doesn't produce one internally. Where do they want it to be? Well, they want it to be delivered and on a specific date. And then your question was that question number 4. What is the value of the difference? So getting the client from 0 to 1 or from whatever state A to state B is, what's the value of that? And then how do we determine, you know, whether that's temporary value or value over time? So do you think it's useful to use those 5 questions during the after action review, or is that maybe just conceptual?
Well, it certainly can be. I don't think it's a alternative framework for an after action review. But it certainly, if you, hang on just a second. You ever have that feeling that you know a sneeze is coming and you're afraid if you start a sentence, you're going to be right in the middle of it?
Yeah.
I honestly, I'm 50-50 right now. We'll see how it goes. So anyway, I don't think it's an alternative framework. I would say the best time to ask those golden questions during after action review is when you can specifically see that that was part of the process at the beginning of the project. If you have that information, then yeah, certainly one of the things, you know, for example, when you ask the question, what went well, you could say, well, the measurement we identified, we improved it by this much. Did improving that measurement actually have the impact that we thought it would? Yes or no? So yeah, those could certainly be part of the parameters that you're looking at when you're asking what went well and what didn't go well. But I'm not necessarily sure that's a framework to replace it or that I would add to it. But certainly if it was part of the beginning of the project, it should be part of the review at the end.
Yeah, just the reason why I ask is because if someone's watching this and they have someone to do an after-action review with, let's say it's not just themselves, and that person is not a Kirk Bowman and sort of an expert in the subject matter, and that person is sort of stuck, not knowing what questions to ask or how to start the dialogue. Just wanted to see if there's a particular framework or some tools or some ideas that people can use just to spark the conversation. And it's really all about asking the right questions, right? We want to ask questions that makes the other person think and go, or the question is so powerful that it actually questions what the other person thought to be the truth at the moment. So sometimes when you ask that perfect question, and I don't know if there's a list of the questions that you're supposed to ask. I mean, this is maybe just more freestyle than anything else. But it is really those key questions that makes the consultant or the professional really think, you know, about what they're doing and why they're doing it and all of that stuff. So just wanted to think about what were some of those tools that people can use. I mean, if you have any more to share, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I want to point out, you know, even in this role play, you're the person who executed the project. I'm not involved in the project, and I'm simply facilitating the after action review, right? And I started it very directly with the first question, what went well? And by the way, that's just, I think it's easier to talk about what went well first. It kind of puts a positive spin on it, not spin, but a positive framework around it, or a positive approach. That's really the better word. And especially if you're in a team environment, I think talking about what went well encourages other people to speak up. And then, you know, then when you get into what didn't go well, because in every project, there's going to be both, right? And so we want to talk about the positive first, because I think it helps get people involved. People are more quick to speak up, I think, on things that went well. And it kind of creates that environment of we all want to, all should contribute. It encourages that type of framework. But I'm a facilitator. And you'll notice I didn't, you know, I kind of started with that first question of what went well, but then I'm not going to say I went off script. I just went deeper just based on some of the questions you were asked. You know, you were like, okay, we delivered it 10 days early. I'm going, okay, well, in my mind, and I didn't ask this to you directly, but in so many words, I explored, well, is there an advantage to getting it faster to the customer? Do we normally get it late? You know, those are some of the things that are playing in my mind that I'm asking you. And that's, especially if you're a one or two person shop, that's why I suggest doing these with a colleague and kind of basically taking turns sitting in the facilitator's chair. If you've got an organization that's, you know, three or more people, you can probably facilitate it, you know, internally, whether somebody's been involved in the project or not. But ideally, you've got somebody to lead it, somebody who can facilitate it. And obviously, it does require the ability to simply inquire further.
Sure. And let me ask you another question. So let's say, for example, we're doing another after action review a month later, 2 months later on the same sort of recurring type of project. So how do we incorporate the first after action review with the second one or the third and avoid, you know, maybe duplication or maybe even use that duplication to maybe create a plan around it to say, hey, you know, this is the second or third time that we speak about the same thing. And we haven't really got an action about it. So is the after action review also a tool to leverage accountability or to actually leverage transformation?
Well, it is. And, you know, for something that's delivered monthly, I would say it's probably fine if, you know, the first 2 or 3 months you deliver it, you do an AAR every time. After that, you may want to switch it to quarterly if it's something that is on a recurring basis. Because yes, you're probably going to have more opportunity for learning and improvement the first 2 or 3 times you do it on a repeating service. After that, it may fall into more of a routine, although you want to try to avoid routine. Number one, in a service to a customer, you always want the customer to be getting value out of it. So you always want to be having that feedback loop with the customer. Now, as we're describing an AAR, it's internal, but you can do an AAR with a customer as well. In fact, I know some organizations where they'll do one internally, they'll also do one with a customer, right? Because there's two perspectives there. And both of them are valid. Both of them are valid. You know, this is not a situation where the customer's always right. We want to understand the customer's perception of value. Then we want to understand our own perception of things, because not only are we looking to improve things for this one customer, but we're looking to improve things that we might learn from this particular interaction and apply it to other customers and other engagements in the future. So it's definitely a tool for continuous improvement or taking advantage of things. it has a greater possibility of impact, significant impact, if it's on one-off projects. But I think you would agree with this, and if I'm wrong, tell me, that if we're going to be in an advisory role, we need to be doing more custom projects with customers, because that's really the opportunity where we have more advisory capacity. I mean, after you've been doing financial statements and the business is steadily improving, unless they have a significant event such as growth, entering a new market, a new product, etc., you're going to need to be looking for other opportunities to help the business.
Now, you mentioned the after-action review with customers, and I certainly understand the value of doing this with a colleague, with an employee, with your partner, whatever that happens to be. But how would you envision this being different with a customer, and or, you know, do we give it the same name, or is the after action review sort of the advisory work? So I would love to know what do you think about after action review when it comes to customers, because I really like the way you mentioned, I mean, how you inserted that into the dialogue.
So I think doing an after-action review with a customer about something you have done for the customer is part of just that feedback loop. It's part of making sure that you're always doing something that is valuable to the customer, which, number one, is important because you don't want them buying something that's not valuable, because that's going to lead to customer dissatisfaction. But two, you want to make sure that you're always working on the thing that's most valuable to them, because that's where you have the opportunity to charge a premium price, right? So it's a win-win. We always say that value pricing aligns the interests of the customer, or the interests of the professional with the interests of the customer, because the way we approach it. So again, if it's something you're doing for the customer, I think it's just part of that closing the feedback loop. However, is there an opportunity once you get good at doing after action reviews for yourself to offer that as a service to your customer, to say, hey, one of the things that we're now offering customers is once you complete a significant project internally, we will come in and facilitate an after action review. And by the way, I can tell you how we've implemented them in our business, how that's actually impacted what we do for you. And we'd like to help you implement a process, a culture of continuous improvement. So is it something that you can add to the portfolio of knowledge and services you provide? It certainly is. But again, I think you would want to train them to do action reviews on what they're doing for their customers. That's where you have an opportunity to add that to the consulting portfolio. But I wouldn't try to do it until you've been doing it yourself for, what, at least 6 months.
Okay, so if I get this correctly, and I think that you have given an incredible idea here, Kirk. I think I'm in love with this idea. So let's assume I'm a solopreneur. I don't have a team. I'm going to have to find two colleagues or two friends, you know, to pair this up with. And then every single month, one person will be sort of the person facilitating and asking the questions to the professional, the one that performs the work. And obviously the professional is there answering the question. And then there's a third person just watching, not really opining or adding questions. They're just watching the whole thing. And then their job is just to make sure that the conversation stayed within the context of an after action review and it didn't really go off topic. So the idea behind that third person is to help the facilitator become a better facilitator. And the facilitator is there asking the right questions to allow the professional to sort of, you know, this road of self-discovery of what, you know, how to improve and how to use this as a learning tool to get better, and then just kind of go and rotate, you know, every month and do this process. And then after you facilitated enough and you observed and you kind of mastered the facilitating process, then facilitating an after action review is the actual service that you perform for your clients that have employees, that have a team that, you know, that also need to improve themselves. Do I get that correct? Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. Probably the only thing I would add is that it only takes two people to do an after action review. The only reason that you would need a third party is if there's multiple people involved in the project, or as the latter case that we've been talking about, where you're actually teaching your customer to do this. And then yes, you're going to kind of be a third party helping facilitate their after action reviews, but it only takes two people. if you're an organization of one, you have to have somebody else. Otherwise, you can't do after action reviews.
So you will either perform an after action review with your client directly, let's say the owner of the business that you serve, and you're doing it with them. So you're trying to extract from them whether they took the right actions, or you could also be sort of a coach. So your client, the owner, CEO of the business, what it happens to be, they're doing it with their team members. So you could actually do both. And that's probably not the natural progression of it, correct?
Right. And so, yes, I think you made a valid point. This idea of facilitating after action reviews for your customer may be a natural outgrowth, but I would add that I think that really is part of the consultative approach overall. This is just one example. Accountants are in a service-based business, and part of the things that you're doing in your own business to improve should be things that you eventually are sharing with your customers in one way or another. Not all at the same time, not all in the same way, but even things like pricing. I look for opportunities, even in my software business, I look for opportunities to help consult with my customers on pricing. Why? It's an area I have expertise in, and many customers don't have a clue.
You're talking about, you know, looking at how your clients price their own products and services and just sort of like critiquing it and offering some advice in that area.
Right. And I'm just using that as an example of however you run your business, there are going to be opportunities there that you can turn how you run your business into products and services for your customers.
And what do you, for someone that's maybe not a pricing expert, what else you think is sort of a low hanging fruit skill that most accounting and professionals have that they can use as a theme to do some after action reviews with their clients?
So are you asking what are the opportunities for an accountant or bookkeeper to facilitate after action reviews for their customers?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like what in this case is low hanging fruit that typically accountants and bookkeepers have the tools for or have access, information they have access to then come to the clients and say, hey, would you like to discuss doing an after action review on this thing or that thing? Obviously, every client is different and every case is different. But from your perspective, you're a non-accountant. So from your perspective, is there one? And you could also ask me and I could tell you what I think about that.
Well, why don't you answer your own question? Because my answer was going to be, it depends. But if you've got a specific answer, please share it.
Yeah, sure. The first thing I'll tell you is accountants in their nature, how we get educated, we are conservative. And conservative means that we try not to spend too much money or try to have a conservative approach to evaluating financial statements. But for the most part, and I'm using the word conservative to not use frugal or cheap, but accountants, we're supposed to sort of be tight with money and we're supposed to be cognizant about our expenditures. I mean, a lot of our clients, they spend within their means and that's okay. And it is their money and they control it. But I find it that sometimes if the client gives you an in, and sometimes it takes a little bit of maneuvering around it. They give you an in. You can do a lot of great work around helping them be more frugal, helping them save more money, helping them be a little bit more cognizant about their expenditures without you making the actual decisions for them. See, a lot of accountants, whenever we throw that idea out there, they think, well, then it's our job to monitor their expenditures. But that's not true. We are historians. So all we're going to do is tell them that they spent it, but they already know that. they know they spent it. And all we're doing is telling them you spent it and you spent it on this. You know, one of the real transformation opportunities we have is, can we help to get inside of our client's head and sort of be that, what was that character in Pinocchio, the conscience, the little character that basically told Pinocchio
Jimmy
what?
Cricket.
Yeah, Jimmy. So you want to be the Jimmy Cricket of your clients. So every time they're going to spend money stupidly, let's say that, they think, what would Hector do in this case? He would be cheap. He would be frugal. He would research this. He would buy, something with a little bit more utility. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Like if you somehow can can get into that with your clients. And that is low-hanging fruit. It is within the domain of our work. We are supposed to be protecting your money. I mean, that's what accountants, bookkeepers are supposed to do. So not engaging into a conversation like that, to me, is just a real big opportunity wasted. So I find that to be a low-hanging fruit and an opportunity to have an after-action review with your clients. Hey, let's have an after-action review about your expenditures this month. And then let's look at what expenditures went way above budget. And assuming there's a budget, so that's a whole other conversation, right? Are we setting up budgets? And then, you know, discussing with all the stakeholders, you know, the people that sign checks and the people that have those credit cards and debit cards, it's, you know, what prompted you to spend money on this, or what required you to spend money on this? And what is this, you know, thing that you spend money on useful for? And how does it add value? And is there an opportunity to buy it less expensive? Or is there a way for us to check within the organization if someone else has one of them? You know, like, there's so much waste in general. There's just so much waste in our, you know, in the business environment where we're just a wasteful society. So accountants have the opportunity to package this service of reviewing expenses as an after-action review, rather than just packaging as a standard bookkeeping and accounting services. So wouldn't you think that's just real obvious low-hanging fruit?
I think so. And actually, this idea came to me as a result of your suggestion. I think it should. Well, let me just ask you the question. Do you think you could come up with three more things that you think you, as an accountant doing due diligence on your customer's behalf, should review with them in a year? And so that once a quarter, you're going to review something. So I'm just going to throw some stuff out. This may not fit, but one quarter, you're going to review expenses. Another quarter, you're going to review inventory turnover. Another quarter, you're going to review pricing. Another quarter, you're going to review, I don't know, profit or something, right? You pick areas like that. That could be very easy. Or maybe, you know, somebody like you who really has a specialty that you can offer your customers in the area of marketing, because you're actually very good at social marketing. You could offer that as one of these things. So how hard would it be for an accountant to go, okay, what are four things that I could just, you know, offer to do after action reviews? And by the way, you don't have to use our term. Call it something else. Call it something that fits your industry. Just call it something that doesn't sound so academic as an after action review. Call it, you know, the Army loves their acronyms. You don't need to use acronyms, but basically the value here is you're going to facilitate reviewing something with your customer so they can grow and benefit. It's a quality. You're really offering a quality improvement opportunity to your customer.
I mean, you can call it strategy meeting. I mean, that's just a simple word, right? I mean, strategy is a sort of an all-encompassing word. And strategy, it's everything, you know, everything around marketing and growth of clients and acquisition of talented employees and reduce your cost and increase the value of your business so you can sell it. I mean, strategy is everything. So we can mask an after action review in a strategy meeting, but we're using the framework, you know, that you said, you know, what went well, what didn't go so well, and what can we learn from this? And we use that as a framework to know what to ask or how to lead the conversation. That way we're just not asking random questions. But I think most importantly, we don't want the other person to think that they're being questioned or that they're being put on the spot or, you know, that I think that's the key component of it. Because at any point in time that you have a person that's the facilitator of a conversation, whether they're a boss or a consultant or an accountant or a coworker, the facilitator of the conversation or the one that asks the questions could be perceived by the other person as somebody just questioning your means, right? Or questioning why you're doing things or questioning your judgment. So it does need to be framed and packaged as an exercise. And the exercise has a process and has a set of questions that put the two people in the conversation in an equal keel. That's the point, that both people are sort of in a transparent one-to-one same level conversation where they're just they're just naively asking questions. And I don't mean by naive, I just mean, you know, just being inquisitive, not necessarily trying to find a specific answer. So just being inquisitive enough to spark the right ideas from the other person and spark some honest feedback from both sides that then can be used to create actionable strategy or actionable steps. So this is why I love this topic. And I think when you present this live at next week at Scaling New Heights, it's going to be really, really awesome. And it's a great opportunity for us to sort of test the waters and give ideas to each other in terms of, I'm sure you already have your deck and everything set up, but you know, this is the great thing about having dialogue is that even from this, you draw something that will somehow affect your presentation next week. So that's why I really like, and this is catharsis. And in one way, shape or form, this is an after action review for each other, isn't it?
Well, it's essentially a pre-AAR on my session on AAR. So yeah, get a little bit tongue-tied in my own words there. But yes, this is a way to kind of, you know, it's a pre-flight check on the session, if you will. And I think we did that on one of your topics, you know, not too long ago, maybe a week or two ago. So let's transition just real quick, because we are literally not even a week. We're days out from Scaling New Heights in Atlanta. So unless you're watching this within 2 or 3 days of when we record it, the show will already be happening. But I know we're both doing multiple sessions. I think I'm doing a total of 6. I'm doing 3 on value pricing, 1 on after action reviews, 1 on ethics and technology. And there's a 6th one. I'm forgetting what topic it is.
I think it's a panel. I think it's on risk. Okay.
I'm not doing any panels this year.
Oh, okay.
I am not. And I'm kind of glad that I'm not. I'm not doing one this year. I did one last year. But anyway, so I'm doing those sessions. And then you've got, I think you're doing your advanced inventory and some other stuff, right?
Yeah. So I'm doing one called How Effectiveness Trumps Efficiency in Relationship Work. And I think we sort of teased that a little bit a couple of episodes ago. And I'm doing one on creating videos. So like recording videos, uploading them to YouTube and Facebook and that sort of thing. Something that I've, you know, kind of became my specialty a couple of years ago. And then on Wednesday, I'm doing just good old QuickBooks Enterprise Inventory. So it's a pretty big array of topics that I'm covering. You know, one is sort of thought leadership, thought provoking. Hey, you know, it's about being effective, even at the expense of being efficient. So my idea is to give some examples of how being efficient is great, but being effective is better, even if you are inefficient. So we'll kind of talk about that, and that's the idea behind that topic. And then the video class is just to kind of share my ideas in terms of, you know, how to go about creating a video and uploading, and kind of like what's the value behind. And then you're doing 3 on value pricing. One is called Run Towards Risk. I'm reading it here. Do what machines won't. Run towards risk instead of away from it. So could you give me a quick Reader's Digest version of what that's going to be about?
Sure. Normally when we hear the term risk, we think about it being in a negative light. Well, you need to realize that according to Peter Drucker, risk is where profits come from. Entrepreneurs, business owners, by definition, take risk. And so I want to present kind of a different view of risk and talk about why one of the reasons I think professionals who are truly consultants, who are truly advisors, are always going to be in demand and are not going to be replaced by technology is because of their ability to take risk.
Right. And computers will always avoid risk because they use a mathematical equation to figure out, you know, whether the probabilities of success versus the probabilities of failure, you know, is it mathematically viable, right? And therefore, if we were to take risks the same way computers do, we would all react the exact same way, and we would all take the exact same action. But one of the wonderful things that create an unequal economy, right, where some people take risks and fail, and some people take risks and win, is the fact that we're human, and sometimes we have a gut feeling about things that don't seem to work, and everything is telling you that it's not going to work, but then it actually works. And one of the awesome examples that I heard was you know, 20 years ago, if you're a parent of, I don't know, Kirk, if you have any daughters, but I have a 9-year-old daughter, and I'm thinking, okay, my daughter's going to ask me when she turns 16, 17, whatever, to ask me for a car. And, you know, 10 years from now, when this happens, you know, am I going to be more, will I be more enticed to buy her a car, or say, you know what, here's Uber budget and just get an Uber, and that will be safer somehow. But then you think about 20 years ago, you know, would a parent say, no, I'm not buying you a car, just get in the car of a stranger and ride around the city? You know, that's something that would be just absolutely inconceivable 20 years ago, where a dad would allow his daughter to get on the car of a stranger instead of having her own car, because somehow that's safer. And whoever had the idea of Uber must have gotten a lot of resistance around, hey, this is very risky. This is a risky idea. And if that person would have been, you know, like a computer or mathematical about taking this risk, they probably would not have taken it. And obviously, you know, history tells, you know, Uber is an amazing idea, and revolutionary. So I love that session about risk. So I think we can wrap it up, Kirk. I don't know if you have any last words about the after action review before we finish up.
I'll simply say this. Come to Atlanta, take an Uber out to Scaling New Heights. Come see Hector and I participate in our sessions. We're going to have a get together sometime while we're there. We hadn't quite nailed down the time or the place, but be watching for that announcement on Facebook. But come hang out with us. And if you are in the audience and you are enjoying these shows, please tell us. We need that feedback so that we know, number one, to continue it, but number two, also what you're interested in, what we're doing well, and what we could improve. We'd love to hear your take of, give us a mini AAR on how we're doing with the show.
Absolutely. And we're going to try, if the technology gods allow it, we're going to try to do one live over there on Tuesday, yep, right before our sessions, which will make it even more interesting. So I'll see you next week, Kirk. It was great.
Thanks, Hector.